10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Live from Yorkshire, this is The Late Show with Sammy White on Teachers Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to The Late Show. Tonight we are going to be talking about professional development of teachers. Is it okay to ever use a lesson from the internet? And much more besides, so stay with us.
Live from Yorkshire, this is The Late Show with Sammy White on Teachers Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome. Thank you very much for coming back and listening again this week. Had so much fun last week. If we didn't meet last week, my name is Sammy White. You're more than welcome to join me this evening. I've got some really exciting guests this evening. I've got the wonderful Joe Fletcher Saxon coming on and Darren White, who is no relation. So we just like to get that up and running. And I think we do have Joe here now. So let's just bring Joe into the conversation. Good evening.
Hello. Can you hear me loud and clear?
I can hear you loud and clear. It's lovely to have you here.
Hi.
How are you?
Oh, I'm good. Thank you. I'm good. And thanks for inviting me along.
So, I didn't do your fancy introduction. You've come straight in. So maybe you want to do a little brief introduction about how wonderful you are.
I can't work. I'll say how wonderful I am. I can tell you what I do. So I'm an assistant principal in a sixth form college, and I look after some of our vocational education for 16 to 19 year olds and all of our adult and higher education. Yeah, that's me.
Fabulous, lovely, and much more than that. So I'll just actually do Jo's proper intro. So Jo is also actively involved in FE research. We were at an event today talking about further education research together, and she's an absolute champion of voices and a great amplifier of voices as well. So we'll start off with an easy question, Jo, then. How did you get into teaching?
So originally I actually worked in early years. So right at the other end of the spectrum, really. So when I left school, I did an NNEB, which some people might recognise what that is. So it's a nursery nursing qualification.
So it's a new one on me.
Well, I suppose it would have been the equivalent of like a BTEC diploma at the time. And then it's been renamed and, you know, changed to something else. And then I worked with young children for quite a few years. So I was in my 20s before I went back into education. I did a degree in teacher training. But I decided I wanted to work in further education, training those who wanted to work in early years. So, and that's the great thing about FE. It's full of dual professionals, isn't it? It's full of people from vocational backgrounds, you know, who also then become kind of academics and teach as well.
Yeah, fabulous. And I think if anyone's got any questions, please send them in to us about Jo's background in teaching. Jo, it's a really interesting point we've got there, and you and I are both involved in adult conversations. Well, I sort of hang on your coattails a bit on that one. It's your baby with Mel and Lou, but it's that adults coming into further education actually have much more of a wider impact across education as a whole, don't they, really?
They do. So I'll just explain, because adult conversations does sound a bit dodgy, doesn't it? we chose that hashtag deliberately to be a bit tongue-in-cheek, really. So what it is a bit of a grassroots campaign to put adult education quite literally back into the conversation, because whenever we talk about teachers, then what people tend to think of is school teachers, of course. So an adult ed doesn't get that much of a look in, you know. So So part of our ambition is to do that. But yeah, you're right. Our education system is so siloed that people tend to become familiar with a particular silo and forget about the connections between. So of course, in fact, the vast majority of people in one of my departments, they are training to work at, well, they already work as teaching assistants maybe, and they're maybe doing a degree with us to become teachers themselves, or they'll be doing a level 3 early years qualification, that kind of thing, and they are all working in primary and early years. So it all crosses over, and I think, you know, people sort of tend to forget that they may work in a school, but actually their training will be with an FE.
Yeah, and I think that's fascinating. If anyone's got any insight on that or they've experienced that, please do message in. But, you know, for for me to consider that actually the person that I'm teaching in my maths classroom on Tuesday night is actually working in a school as a teaching assistant and is desperate to be a higher level teaching assistant at HLTA. I don't know if that's what they're still called, but that's what she said it is. Yes. she's desperate to be a HLTA, but she can't until she passes her maths. And so she's right. teaching in a primary school key worker children, but she can't progress until she passes her maths. So she's still in further education. The true lifelong learning, isn't it?
Oh yeah, absolutely. In fact, we've got students who've started out with us as sort of doing like introduction to childcare type courses, then have gone on to level two, level three, then done their degree because college HE, that's another under-recognised sort of aspect of education, done a degree, then done their PGC with us, and now they're out there teaching. They've gone right through the whole spectrum with us.
But that's wonderful, isn't it? And that is the beauty of further education. And it's not a further education show. We're just highlighting how broad further education is, really. And I think that's why it's really important to get these adult conversations, which is a bit tongue-in-cheek, out there. It's a fabulous hashtag. And there's a wonderful website as well. And I will direct people to Stacey's piece that went out last week. And I did mention it on the show last week, but it still stuck with me, that piece that Stacey wrote. Yeah. You must have been so proud when she put that in.
I really was. And she was very, very brave, sort of putting her own experiences, her life experiences of how she came back into education as a student and the things she went through in her personal life as she did that, and then also became a teacher herself. So yeah, it was very moving. So that's something called, again, we love a hashtag, 52 weeks, 52 speaks. And what we're doing is we're putting out every single week, so it's relentless optimism, I'm calling it, a piece, a voice, at something from the world of adult education. So that by the end of the year, we've got, you know, a fabulous collection of, sometimes it's stories, sometimes it's artifacts, sometimes we've had creative poetry pieces, we've had all sorts, really. And anybody's welcome to put something out through that campaign. Yeah, we'd love to have more.
Yeah, fabulous. And I think that's why I really wanted to have you on, really, because you're very good at amplifying other people's work and other people's voices. And I just wondered, and I'd appreciate people's comments and messages coming in on this as well, how important is it in today's world to have what we're now calling a personal learning network or a PLN? How important is that for you, Jo?
I don't think I strategically thought about it when I started, say, for example, on Twitter and then more lately LinkedIn and then actually a professional Instagram account. Professional, that makes it sound something like it's not. I don't think I was strategic at the beginning, but I've certainly felt the benefits. So, I mean, Twitter's probably my busiest and that's where I've made lots and lots of connections on there and friendships as well. People haven't met in real life, so you, yeah.
Yeah, but, definitely.
Yeah. It's sort of become like a kind of an informal space where you can develop and, you know, get new ideas for your practice. Your thoughts will be challenged. Yeah, I suppose it's like a staff room with knobs on. it can be a really, really special place. It can be overwhelming actually for people as well, for the first time when they first dive in. But yeah, I've made lots of connections. And then there's actual activities that go on, of course, on Twitter. So UKFE chat or school sector have UK Ed chat or their primary sort of chats and things like that, where people will gather, and be in conversation about, you know, various things each week. So yeah, fantastic place to be.
Yeah, and I just want to touch on some things you've said in there as well, and I'd appreciate messages coming in. If you are finding Twitter new to you as an education specialist, how are you finding it? And if you are experienced, how are you finding it? Because it's been a bit overwhelming, certainly the past 12 months. I didn't exist 12 months ago. Obviously, yeah. I existed, but I didn't exist. And I actually didn't exist 6 months ago. In this edu Twitter world, and you know, my life has completely changed in those 6 months. And like you say, it can be overwhelming, but I just wonder if people who are listening, it, how do they manage the time, and how do you manage your time? Because you mentioned it can be a bit overwhelming. So how do you make time? Because, you know, let's not forget there's still a home that needs running, and if people don't follow you, they won't know. I mean, I don't know if you want to mention Sheep Cam.
So in this particular lockdown, because we're all over banana bread baking. Oh, that's not the code word we talked about. we're all over baking, I think. So I thought I'd have a new challenge in this one. So I've got a little flock of Black Welsh Mountain sheep. So I have been out making sure I get some fresh air every day. I've been out to feed them, and I filmed it and I popped that on Twitter. Yeah. Yeah. So
and
yeah, that's been
joy. The joy that's bringing to everyone is absolutely wonderful, and I think it's really lovely as well when you're there with your lipstick. I find that really, really funny as well.
It's funny everybody mentions lipstick. I don't know why. I guess that's just part of me. Yeah. The other thing to say about social media actually is one of the things I did in lockdown one is I had a coaching session on how to use LinkedIn. Yes. Oh. Did you know that was a thing? You can get coaching.
I didn't know that was a thing. Where do you get such a thing?
So a friend, I'll have to post her name. Somebody might mention her name in the chat, so I've just got a mind blank. So she does do this professionally. She does coaching. So, that's just really, I think there's a different community of people on LinkedIn. Some people do cross over, but I think there's a particular community there. So if I want to do, you know, put a message out there or an article about a particular topic or just connect with people, I've connected with different people in LinkedIn. So that's an even bigger PLN. Yeah.
So taking that then, is that because you're finding it's more a professional space on LinkedIn than Twitter?
I've just remembered her name. Susanna Chambers. She'll kill me. Susanna Chambers. She is.
Oh, I follow Susanna.
Yes. She does she does lots of coaching. She does life coaching as well. And singing lessons. Oh, she's many, very many talents. Yes, I suppose so. It is. I think it's sort of billed as a more professional space, maybe. Yeah, maybe. Yes, I haven't put the sheep on there, so maybe you're right, yeah. Yes.
And if anyone's listening, well, I know people are listening, but those of us that are listening, if you're on LinkedIn and you're on Twitter, do you communicate differently? Do you feel you need to communicate differently when you're on Twitter? Do you feel your messages need to be different on LinkedIn? Do you feel your messages need to be different on Twitter? I'd be fascinated to know more about that. And something that you said to me before, Joe, is that this that we're doing now and your podcast that you do as well has democratized broadcasting. And I thought that was a really powerful term that you said to me. So I just want to unpick that if you don't mind.
Okay. Well, I have to credit Alistair Smith, my podcasting partner in crime, with that. We were actually talking about podcasts at the time, how that was kind of a democratized broadcast. Anybody can make a podcast, and it kind of doesn't matter almost the quality of it. We'll tolerate different levels of quality now, particularly over the past year. But you could say that of all types of broadcasting, really, because what has everybody been? I mean, in lockdown one, myself and Graham Pitchforth, who we do Brewed FE together, we were straight out onto Brew. We did a month's worth of creation of blogs from people. People are doing Instagram lives. They're doing YouTube live streams as well. The podcast radio, there's this radio station, there's Teacher Hug Radio. We're all at it basically, aren't we? Nobody's stopping us. So it's great.
And do you think, and I'll ask the listeners this as well, do we think that this is because, is it because we're bored? We can't be bored. We've got so much to do. But is it because we're more comfortable in our home situations, or is it because that we see that now is the time to sort of amplify education and the good bits of education?
There's all of that going on, isn't there? I don't think anybody's bored. What teacher can be bored now? we've no time to be bored. But I think some of these opportunities have certainly emerged in the last year, and we've rallied around them as a place to connect, to build community, to learn from each other, to share stuff. And it's been a great place to be, really.
I think so. I think the sharing thing's really important, and I think all this, everyone is amplifying education, and certainly this week, and we won't go into the ins and outs of this week, but I think now more than ever, we've sort of seen the power of Edu Twitter come to its fore in the support and collaborative nature of everybody supporting people in education at the minute. Because I think for me personally, when I'm seeing the news at the minute and I'm seeing the schools and colleges murmured under their breath, it feels to me like there's a teacher bashing's long been fashionable. But I'm kind of feeling like it's taken it to the next level. So I'm just wondering if all these podcasts and radio shows and everything like that are teachers' ways of combating that teacher bashing that's happening. And I'm just looking in a message that's come in. When you're isolated from your colleagues, you possibly get a stronger sense of education as much as a large community. I think so. And I think Joe's referred to that as well, in that love and connection that you can feel in a professional learning network or a personal learning network. And I've heard someone call it a professional learning family as well this week. What do you think of that term, Job? A PLF instead of a PLN?
Oh, right. No, I've not heard that. No, not referred to as a family. I suppose, yeah, particularly over the last year, we might have felt, certainly on our Joy FE family, we've certainly felt like that. I was talking to somebody today who described some of this stuff that's going on as a quiet revolution.
Yeah.
Quiet revolution, which I did like. Yeah. So maybe it is a slight rebuff to some of the criticisms. It's a place where there's lots of voices being shared. Yeah.
I think a quiet revolution. I'm not sure we could describe your work as quiet though, Joe. And I did make you laugh earlier today when I said you were being quiet. And you were like, how can you tell if I'm being quiet?
Yeah, how can you? How can you?
I'm not in your house.
No.
but I think this amplification of voices, and I'd love to know from listeners, if you found your voice in this lockdown, I'd love to know if you found your voice and you are out there selling your message. I can see Mars has messaged in, and you and I both know Mars through our
journey. Oh my goodness, family. How many people watched her TikTok maths puzzle? Like when I last looked, it was at something like 57,000 or something ridiculous like that.
I don't even know what TikTok is, to be honest, but I had to learn quite quick because Mars was on it. But Mars has long had a wonderful website of resources for maths teachers, completely free, with YouTube videos, with questions, with answers, that you can just pick up and take into your lesson, because she's just that kind of giving person. But I really feel like, I mean, we've had these conversations over the past week quite a few times, haven't we, Jo, and that people are still just discovering it, and that amplification, it's like a ripple effect, isn't it, at the minute, of love of people that are doing wonderful things.
Yeah. There's a really supportive community there. Earlier today, I was talking to Hina Suleiman. So she is an educator, and she's involved with the Working Class Academics Conference, actually. Now, she has one of the things she was really keen on at the beginning, there's a group of us working on that conference, is to take to TikTok, actually. And she's a real TikToker. Is that a word? No, I don't even know. Can you be a TikToker? Whatever. I'm not with the youth, so I don't know. But so she has put stuff on about the conference on TikTok, and it's had hundreds and hundreds of watches already. But that's because she gets that there'll be certain demographics, certain age groups that will not necessarily engage with the message or whatever via Facebook or Twitter or whatever it is. That's a place to be. It's the same with Instagram as well. So, yeah, I think, you know, different people are attracted to different mediums, aren't they?
Yeah, and I think so. And I still would love listeners to message in. If you are on LinkedIn and if you are on Twitter, do you communicate or portray yourself differently across those platforms? I think that's something really interesting I'd love to know more about. I'm looking at some messages that have come in, Joe, and I'm seeing that teaching can be a lonely profession in school, and that's in capitals. I probably didn't put enough emphasis on it. If you're teaching all day, lockdown has allowed us to collaborate more. Absolutely, Darren. I think thinking back to the days, and you'll know this, Joe, as well, thinking back to the days of full-on back-to-back teaching in the classroom, we're both not in the classroom full-on anymore with our different roles, but it probably was quite lonely, wasn't it, really?
The other thing is that, I mean, it won't be quite the same in a school as it is in a college. But in a college, you don't necessarily have staff room spaces anymore in the way that...
I think that's true in schools, though, Nigel, yeah. To be fair. With modern, when I was in schools, with modern school buildings, they're just not built.
So there you go. So that becomes an isolator then, doesn't it? You know, yeah. Not having those... Lots of learning from each other happens in that kind of incidental space, doesn't it? It's where you're sat having it's like those water cooler moments. You know, you're sat there, you're having a coffee, you're chatting about this student did this is what I did, and you just take something on board in that moment. And without, you know, those opportunities completely stripped away from us, then those online spaces are the places where you can be and where you can get a little bit of that experience.
Yeah, I think there's a lot in that. And I know another friend of ours, Dr. Lou Mycroft, and I, we do some sessions for colleges up and down the country about building communities online. And we're often finding people are quite surprised when we say that leadership actually need to think about how they're going to do this as well, and how are they going to build staff communities online, because that slamming the door when you've had class 2B and they've been little so-and-sos, where does that go if you're on your own?
Yeah, sort of where do you decompress? I know a number of the people we know have been doing sort of online, like coffee sort of slots, you know, where you can just come and it's that informal space to decompress. That's definitely been happening. I'd say that's been happening more grassroots rather than leadership led, really.
I think so, and I think you are in a leadership position, and I think leaders have worked incredibly hard this year across all sectors, because getting, you know, the emails at 4 o'clock on a Friday afternoon and having to put things in place Monday morning. So hats off to you. So that's probably why it's happening at grassroots level. Let's not beat the leadership people around the head that they've not done.
But there's also that some of the best people to solve the problem, it's not the people in the leadership positions at all. It's the people in the classrooms, you know. It would be really mad for us to suggest as a leadership team, or that we think you should have a coffee afternoon and come and, you know, sort out your well-being with us. We'll sort it out in that hour. That's just ridiculous. So highly supportive, yes. Enabling, yes. But it's not necessarily for, I think, a leadership team to force that.
I think there's something just in that as well. When I used to work in industry before I became a teacher, which is many, many, many years ago now, I worked for a big multinational, and they had any idea is a good idea sort of thing. And you could send an email to the CEO of what your idea was. One of his minions would read it. And then if it was a good idea and they took it forward, you'd get a bottle of champagne. And then if it turned into a really great idea, you'd get a pay bonus. And it's always staggered me that in education that doesn't happen, that where I've worked, it's certainly not happened. In the schools I've worked in, it's not happened. In the colleges I've worked in, it's not happened. Where you can't just email an email address that says, do you know what, when the lock on that door clicks the wrong way 3 times, it causes this. Do you know what I mean? Those little minute things in your classroom that, because you're on the grassroots. So a real example of this is a classroom at college where there's a pipe in the ceiling, and if someone goes to the toilet above, obviously you can hear it in the classroom, and it's quite distracting.
That's like my office, to be honest. That's like my office. Oh, yes, I can hear what goes on,
yeah. But the room above is the boardroom. So the leadership didn't know that every time they were using the boardroom, they were causing problems for the learners. And obviously I had to say something, because I just can't keep my mouth shut. And I did point it out to them, and they were like, oh my goodness, Sammy, that's completely, we won't have board meetings on a Tuesday at 3, because that's going to interrupt your speaking and listening assessments or whatever it is we were doing at the time. And the leadership are open to those ideas. It's just getting those ideas from the grassroots level up to leadership. So if any of the listeners have had any experience of that, I'd love to hear your thoughts. I'm just going to dive back into some of the messages that have come in, Joe. And there's a lot of love for Mars in there. Darren's found a lot of love for sea shanties. Right, we'll come to Darren later. He's our guest later on, and I'm sure he'll have lots to say, as he always does. Twitter and LinkedIn, different spaces, right, Darren? And we're going to talk about this later on. And space is money, and money must be spent on shoehorning kids into small rooms. Yeah, and that's why staff rooms have disappeared. Yeah, absolutely. And Dr. Lou, yeah, of course. And then opening up thinking spaces. I think so. Mm. I think, Lou, that's really powerful as well. And then online communities through school can feel strangled by the need to be extra professional as everything is recorded and could be picked over. I find that quite sad, don't you, Jo?
Okay. Yeah. I don't think we've got, lessons are recorded. And we use Teams and then they're posted onto our VLE, which is Canvas. But not anything else, really. Staff briefing, maybe, but that's about it, really. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I think like you say, that enabling space is important, isn't it? Really. And not directive. Yeah. I think we're past the time of leadership being directive.
I know. Yeah, so we've really worked on trying to increase the amount of autonomy and choice that staff have. Going back to professional learning, that's been a real focus over the last year or two. So rather than directing staff to, say, particular workshops, and prescribing what people, like a menu, say, right, you've got to, pick from this menu. We've really flipped that on its head this year. With this year, we've started by asking staff, what are you curious about? What are the kind of things you're interested in? Without revealing anything about the kind of options to them, we just ask them, what's the thing? What's the thing that really gets you? What you're interested in? And then we've said, okay, do you want to pursue that area of interest through coaching? Do you want to pursue it through doing a small research project? Do you want to attend a workshop on that? How do you want to pursue it? So yeah, we're really trying to flip the narrative on that one.
Isn't that powerful? That's quite refreshing for me to hear, actually. And I wonder if any of our listeners are experiencing education and their development in a similar way. Lou saying it sounds fabulous and she wants you to write it or present it. She's already finding extra work for you, Jo, before you've even finished your sentence.
I'll tell you what, I have some of my best ideas in the shower. I had the idea the other day. I thought, I'm going to introduce a new pathway. So In this Be Curious model, we've got coaching, we've got journal club. Actually, that was new this year. People can read stuff. Can you imagine? Read stuff. they can do research project, like I said, But I thought next year I might look at adding TULIPs. So that's teaching and learning improvement projects. Oh. What do you think? Teaching and learning. Yeah, I just like it because of the acronym, really. But yeah, so I'm going to... I think that'll be a new sort of pathway where people can bid to say, okay, I've seen this issue in college, across college. How about I tackle that as my professional development?
What I love there is that the ownership that the participants have on it as well. A transformative book that I read in lockdown one. Yeah, I'm sure it was lockdown one, was called Be Excellent on Purpose by Dr. Sanya Bell, which is an American school principal. And honestly, it's just one of those books. It's literally about how she changed the narrative of her school that was underperforming. The kids were bad kids and nothing was really going right. And she built a culture about being excellent on purpose and those intentional actions. And there's tons of stuff in it. It's a really simple read. But one of the things that really struck with me that she said in it was, if you stand there and you say those children or those students,
you're othering.
And you say, if you flip it and you say my students and our students, you automatically own the problem and you will help to be excellent on purpose because you'll work to find a solution. If you brush them off and say they're someone else's problem, then you won't change anything. And I just think that just struck with me. And what you were saying there about the issues that staff are finding and them owning that, I think that will be really powerful for you.
Well, it's the thing you said, it's the person spotting the issue.
Yeah.
No leadership team can see all the problems and absolutely cannot come up with all the solutions. So, yeah. Intentional positivity then. Now, we've talked about that before, haven't we? That's where the whole micro joy came from, isn't it, really?
And we must credit, it was you that came up with micro joy. I mentioned it on the show last week. And micro joy sort of, if you can imagine microaggression, it's the complete opposite of a microaggression. It's a micro joy. I had a micro joy just before I came on the radio and that my best friend had a baby. So I'm slightly distracted and looking at baby photos as we're speaking.
Yes, he's very cute.
Yeah, I did have to share the love with you. I've not shared his picture widely yet, but so I'm slightly distracted by that. But yeah, tell us a bit more about Micro Joys and Intentional Positivity, Jo.
Okay, so to steal a bit of Lou's words on this, so it's not the having the hot chocolate type of self-help, looking after yourself type of joy. It's relational, we would say. So it's about those interactions between people that can become joyful. You know, sometimes I think it can even be how you word an email, you know, how you deliberately rephrase something, or even step away from it from 5 minutes and go back and see if, you know, it's okay to send. It could be having the hot chocolate, but with somebody. That's what Lou would say. So it's the, I suppose, not necessarily something you can always plan, but it's about making an intentional step to be positive and joyful about something that you're dealing with.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the theme of our conversation, isn't it? About this positive narrative of education at the minute, and that amplification of the good things that are going on right the way through, because, you know, through our work in further education, we're seeing early years practitioners coming in doing their qualifications with us in further education, and we're hearing the narratives of schools and colleges around the country. And I think there is so much good work going on at the minute, and yeah, just make time to be a bit intentionally positive. I think that's a really powerful thing. I just want to quickly, Jo, because we've been talking for ages, I just want to quickly, Jo, ask you, what have you seen this week that's been top of the pops for you? What's been the most amazing thing you've seen this week?
Oh my goodness. What out of, oh, I can't really think, probably beyond today.
Well, that's what I was thinking you'd say.
Yeah. So we were at a conference today with lots of other educators. And I suppose the theme really was about research within the further education field. But I mean, again, we were connecting with lots of people there. There were some great keynote speakers, and then we whizzed off into breakout rooms to talk to each other. So I mean, you know, that kind of stuff is just, it feeds your soul.
Yeah,
reminds you why you're in the job. I think so.
And I think for me, when I was, it was the first time I'd been to that space today, and it was, the theme was about research in further education, and how everybody's so busy doing the job and we need to make time for research, and how do you find the time? And it was just comforting to hear, like it is throughout the whole of the past year, in that it's just comforting to hear that other people are in the same boat as you, and that things are really hard, time's tight, and that there's really good work going on, and that everybody's just here to do the best that they can. And I just thought it was a really wonderful space today, and the joy on your face in that space, Jo, as well, was wonderful to see. You were absolutely in your element, surrounded by wonderful people, just like loving the conversations that were happening.
It's like that though, isn't it? It's like that any so conference event or unconference, if we're being trendy, whatever it is that you do. Yeah, it's good to be with people.
I was just asking what conference it was. It was Huddersfield Uni, wasn't it?
It was based there, but it was the Learning and Skills Research Network. So Rachel Terry is the convener for Yorkshire and Humber, and she happens to work at Huddersfield Uni, yes. So they hosted today's gathering. But there are Learning and Skills Research Network conveners all over the country who organise events all over the country. So, that was one of them.
Fab, thank you. Right, Jo, we're going to wrap up now, but thank you very much for your time. It's been wonderful having you on.
Thank you.
Give your Twitter handle a shout out so everyone knows where to follow you.
Oh, it's just at J Fletcher Saxon.
Lovely. Thanks very much, for Jo, and we're going to go to the news now, and then we'll be back with my next guest.
Live from Yorkshire, this is The Late Show with Sammy White on Teachers Talk Radio. This is Teachers Talk Radio, and this is Teachers Talk Radio News with Tom Hopkins-Burke.
This is Tom Hopkins-Burke with your latest education news. A second successive year of teacher assessments at GCSE and A-level has pushed the exam board Pearson to launch a consultation into the future of exams. The former Education Secretaries Damien Hines, Baroness Morris and Lord Blunkett will guide an expert panel on assessment and qualifications for students aged 14 to 19. The panel also includes Professor Robert Coe of the Education Endowment Foundation and Daisy Christodoulou, author and director of education at No More Marking. A six-week national consultation process, which began this week, will attain the views of students, parents and education professionals on adapting the assessment system. An interim report will be published in May. Anne Longfield has accused the government of institutional bias against children and families in her final speech as Children's Commissioner. Longfield also called for a COVID covenant as part of a year of opportunity to help young people recover from the consequences of the pandemic. She added that she believed that Prime Minister Boris Johnson did want to build back better for children, but warned that the UK was set to face the highest levels of child poverty since records began in the 1960s. Gavin Williamson has championed a student who proclaimed that gay people were an abomination as part of his avowed aim to strengthen free speech and academic freedom at universities. The Education Secretary cited the case of Felix Ngole, a mature student expelled from the University of Sheffield in 2016. Ngole declared that God hates homosexuality and accused gay people of committing a wicked act. Williamson defended Ngole as part of his criticism of intolerance and cancel culture in his policy paper on free speech and academic freedom in higher education. Mr. Williamson is set to appoint a free speech champion to investigate the no platforming of speakers on university campuses and to impose fines on institutions which fail to actively promote free speech. That's your latest education news with Tom Hopkinsburg.
Live from Yorkshire, this is The Late Show with Sammy White on Teachers Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome back. You'll notice I played the wrong news there and you heard lots of things in the background. I don't quite know what's going on, but we'll work it out and I'll get the right news for you later on. Thank you for listening in. I'm going to bring our next guest in now. So Darren is Darren White. Again, no relation, it's just a common surname in the world. Darren is a self-taught learning technologist and is a teacher at two secondary academies in Essex and is part of the AET core team of innovators. And he's also a Google certified trainer and innovator. That's how we met. And he's the founder of myedtechbuddy.co.uk. Darren is a teacher of over 20 years and a senior leader for 10. He's his own podcast and YouTube channel. Gosh, there's a lot of things in this intro, isn't there? And as well as being a co-leader of GEG UK and Global GEG, Darren is also the co-host of Short and Sweet with Ben and Darren on YouTube. Wow, I really should have read that introduction before I started it. Darren, are you there, Darren?
I am indeed. Hi, Sammy. How you doing?
I'm all right, thank you. That was a really long intro you gave me there. I should have proofread that before we started.
I noticed you left off the last bit I gave you, though.
there were lots of other bits in there that we won't go into.
No, I just like to check that you're reading it carefully.
How are you, Darren?
I'm very well, thanks. It's been a busy week so far, but good fun. Lots to talk about.
Yeah, we've had a wonderful week, haven't we, as part of our Google Innovator midway point meetup this week. So that was quite exciting to see everybody again.
Yeah, that was easy for you to say, isn't it? No, it was brilliant. Yeah, I can't believe it's 6 months already since VIA 20, the first virtual Google Innovator Academy. And yeah, that time has flown by. In no time at all. And I think that this year in general was very, very odd in that it seems like lockdown only started yesterday on one hand, but at the same time, it seems like forever ago. And I really have no idea what day it is.
Yeah, it's getting a bit like that for me now, to be honest. But while we're on Google in a bit, and so I'll give a bit of context in that Google offers some certification. What is wrong with me? I can't speak. It's you, Darren. You've made me go off. I was fine beforehand. They do certificates. So they do a level one, a level two, and then there's a trainer, and then there's an innovator. Basically, just accrediting the skills that teachers learn for using the Google Workspace products, so Google Docs, Google Slides, Google Jamboard, Google Classroom, all those things that teachers use every day, and it's just accrediting those. But you and I and Ryan, who's in the chat, and I can see Dave's just joined. He's an older cohort, and I saw Claire in the messages earlier. We are innovators, and so part of that innovator journey is we have to create a project. And your project, I just wondered if we could spend just a couple of minutes just outlining what your project is for people, please, Darren, because it's a really wonderful thing that you've built.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, myedtechbuddy.co.uk is basically the solution to my problem that I really wanted to solve. So when you go into the academy, you have to go in with a how might we question, something that's an issue or a concern or a problem in education that you'd like to solve. But you go in without a solution, which in itself is quite difficult to do. But it teaches you to kind of not be too precious about your own ideas and to really listen in and empathize with your audience and your target audience, but also listen to advice from other people. So my Tech Buddy basically grew out of a desire I had to make teachers feel more confident using educational technology in the classroom originally. Little did we know that we would end up doing more of it than we expected outside of the classroom. But it was designed really to initially focus that those people that have been teaching for sort of a longer period of time, similar to myself, sort of 20 plus years, who've got a huge wealth of experience in terms of their subject knowledge, their relationships with students and everything else, that I felt was starting to kind of drift away from education or feel like their time was coming to an end, if you like, because they really didn't like the way technology was going because they didn't feel confident with it. And because we're all so busy, finding the time to get used to it when you're nervous is very difficult. And I don't care. I'll press a button and see what happens. I've no problem with that whatsoever. But for other people, that's really scary. It's really daunting. So I wanted to kind of give them a platform where they could, first of all, not break anything, because that's one of the most important messages I try and get across. Because, of course, many of the kind of long in service teachers were from or grew up in a generation where you could break them and it could all go wrong and you needed a real specialist to be able to put it right. So things have changed a lot on that front, but the fear aspect hasn't. And then through some research really that I was doing on Twitter and various other places, it also dawned on me that actually the newer teachers joining the profession, those newly qualified teachers and people coming in into teacher training, they weren't getting any instruction either on how to use technology in the classroom. And I think it's because of this it's one of my pet hates, this dreaded term of digital natives, that because people have grown up with technology, therefore they're going to be brilliant at it. But they're good at what they do. You know, they might be great with an iPhone, but ask them to put a formula into a spreadsheet or to use a Google form and actually then be able to find where the answers have gone is a completely different ballgame. So I wanted to create something that was going to make people feel like they could play around, they could practice, and they could do it as many times as they liked until they felt confident and then be accredited for it. Because the people that I spoke to prior to putting this all together basically said that, look, you can stand up in front of, you know, the whole staff in a CPD session and show me all of these wonderful things, but that's not going to sink in with me. I need to physically do it 4 or 5 times at least for the chance of remembering it. And that's where it came from. So I built the whole thing in Book Creator using IRAD, which is a great tool for interactive step-by-step instructions and explainer videos. Nothing in it is longer than 8 minutes. So it's all really, really short and easy to do, and you can pick it up at any point. And at the end of every unit, you can gain a badge, and then ultimately you become a graduate, and there's some graduate perks in terms of free or discounted offers from, and I must mention them, three edtech companies who've been fantastically supportive. Firstly, Moat, who many people will have heard of, which is a voice feedback tool, who've offered the first 100 graduates a year's free Moat unlimited subscription, which is fantastic. And also IRAD have offered a discount on their yearly subscription, and Book Creator as well have offered 3 months premium access to anyone who completes the program. And it started off just as teachers, and then it grew, and there's also now a support staff version specifically for people working in the school offices and using G Suite tools and other tools for their daily work. And I'm now working on phase four, because phase three was the podcast. So phase four, we're now working on a student version, which is going to be aimed at bridging the gap between using technology in school and appropriate use of technology in the workplace.
Wow. And I think there's a lot in that there. So not only have we got My EdTech Buddy that you've built is a safe space for people to go learn these skills. So if you are a teacher and you're thinking, my digital skills aren't quite there, it's a safe space to go and to do that as well. But something you mentioned there was a digital native, and Dave's gone straight in saying that there's no such thing as a digital native.
Absolutely.
It's interesting. So I love to read, and a book that I've been reading quite a few times recently, I like to read a few times if it's quite an academic text, is called The Manifesto for Teaching Online by Edinburgh's Digital University. And it's about the trust issues of teaching online and things like that. But also in it, it talks about digital natives and how technically, because you and I, Darren, are slightly older, we should be better at using technology because we've had more time to practice.
Absolutely. Although I'm completely self-taught, as we said. So I actually got talked out of it. Yeah. I was going to do IT for my GCSEs, and one of my teachers talked me out of it because they said really it was a bit of a flash in the pan and it wasn't going to go anywhere. And how right they were. Teachers, eh?
Yeah, and I'm interested to anyone who's listening about this digital natives. Lou's saying that she feels with me in her life there's no such thing that digitally that have to explore, but easily overwhelmed by new stuff. Yeah, and I think that's it, Lou, isn't it? I think people do get overwhelmed by new tech, and we can mention names of apps and things like that, and it's something we're very guilty of, isn't it, Darren, that we'll be like, oh, well, you just need to use this, don't you?
Absolutely, and there is so much out there that if you don't know, you literally are kind of, well, where do I start? Because you're like a kid in a sweet shop. But the other problem that you might have is that quite often there's so much out there that you try and use everything. And I try and get across the message that what tool you use actually isn't important. It's the pedagogy behind it and what you're trying to achieve. And I might use a Jamboard one lesson and a Padlet the next and Wakelet the next. And it's not about kind of being brand loyal or anything like that. It's about what is it I'm trying to achieve and what's going to help me and the students get to where I want them to get to, and what's the best tool for that. And that's what gets your creative kind of juices flowing. And I have to be honest, it's reinvigorated my love of teaching after sort of 22 years. Actually, suddenly
you're not
you start.
I've been teaching 22 years, Darren.
I am. Unfortunately, I had this conversation.
It wasn't genuine.
It sounded genuine. I was interviewed by a group of students this afternoon, actually, and they couldn't believe I've been teaching 22 years. Yeah.
So. Yeah, and I think the term digital native then, so a digital native, like you said, just because you can use an iPhone doesn't mean you can use this, that, the other, but also many of the devices that they are using, our students, our iPhones or our smartphones or Android phones or Samsung phones or whatever phone it is that they're using. And some things aren't mobile friendly and some things are mobile friendly. Mm-hmm. And like you said, it's got to be about the pedagogy behind what you're trying to do. I I want to give a shout out to Nick, who is Mar Ideas the Merry on Twitter, and he coined the phrase right tool, right job, and it stuck with me forever. Just the right tool, the right job. It's an interesting thing when you come to technology and ideas that are embedding technology. And a lot of teachers have come to me quite scared, and Lucy, and she's quite scared as well. But I always say, you check what they know at the beginning, you give them some input, you let them practice the skill, and you check what they know at the end when they leave. And then the technology fills in the gaps, I think. What do you think about that, Darren?
No, I couldn't agree more. Absolutely. You know, and quite often, I think, just not knowing is quite empowering sometimes, because you can then take it wherever it takes you, and you don't have a preconceived idea of what's going to happen. So I love the fact that I'll get kids who will just randomly start clicking things and discover stuff, and it keeps me on my toes, because I suddenly then have to think about, oh, I didn't realize they could do that. How do I lock that down, or how do I control that, or do I just let them play with it for now and then integrate it later? And I think that's a really important thing, particularly when you're introducing new technology with students, and staff come to that in CPD, is to start off with, when a tool is new, particularly if it's quite innovative and it's quite exciting and collaborative, let them play. The first experience, you're going to get people drawing and writing and messaging each other and doing all sorts, because they're just excited. Like, and we all get like that. We're all excited.
You're even excited in your languages lessons. Language is quite a dull subject, though, isn't it?
Of course they're excited in languages lessons. It's a fantastically cultural subject. But I don't just teach languages, you see. So although I do...
You put a tweet out earlier today, and that's what prompted me to say that, was you were saying about how responsive languages subjects need to be at the moment to what content they're putting into their curricula.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a bit of a bugbear of mine that obviously I have been teaching languages for 22 years, and we're still teaching students how to say things like, you know, I'd like to send a postcard. Where can I buy one? And then where can I buy some stamps to put on that? And teaching them how to do role plays and things where, you know, they need to phone up and book a hotel in France. And then the kids will rightly say, well, why would you phone up? You just go on hotels.com and book it, don't you?
Yeah.
So, you know, it needs to move with the times, because it's not as relevant as it needs to be. And language learning is tough. It's hard, particularly in this country. It's easier elsewhere because they've got more exposure to it. You know, people talk about, oh, other people find learning English a lot easier because, well, yeah, there's more of it around. You can watch MTV, you can watch Netflix, you can do this, that, and the other, and it's everywhere. And a lot of other schools spend a lot more time on it in other countries and start doing it a lot earlier. We have this strange situation in this country where we don't really do languages properly or consistently until we get to secondary school. And that's no disrespect to primary teachers, because primary schools have only got the resources they've got available, and they can only teach the languages that people in the school actually teach. But then you might have six primary schools all feed into one secondary. And through those six primary schools, you might have four or five different languages, but the secondaries might not offer those languages.
That's
so
it's, isn't it?
Yeah, it's, and everybody's at different starting points. Some might study some French in year three. Some might do some Spanish in year four. Some might do a whole term on it. Some might only do it when it's the teacher's PPA time, because there's a classroom assistant that's volunteering to take some of those lessons. So you never have a level playing field. But the students, particularly when they come in at secondary, feel like they're in a level playing field. So when they look at their progress, they'll look at their Spanish or their French alongside things like geography and history and PE and everything else and maths. And they'll think, well, I'm not making much progress because I'm a much, much, much lower level. Mm. And it's hard for them to get their heads around the fact that, yeah, you are at a lower level because you've only been speaking that language for a matter of months. And if you add up all of the time, even in the first year at school, there are some schools where even if students attended every week and didn't miss a day, they still might only do sort of 80 hours of learning that language in the whole year. And when you break that down into actually how many days it is, and you say that to the students, that, you know, it starts to dawn on them, but it doesn't help them in terms of their confidence. Because
no, it doesn't. So we're touching on that there's a problem with languages teaching in this country, but I'm conscious that I just need to get to the news, Darren. So we'll be right back after the news, and then I'm going to ask you a really personal question after the news. So stay with us.
Oh.
So stay with us, everybody, and we'll be right back. And I promise this time it'll be the right news.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and this is Teachers Talk Radio News with Tom Hopkins Burke.
This is Tom Hopkins Burke with your latest education news. The Education Secretary, Gavin Williamson, has announced that summer schools will be part of the catch-up measures for pupils in England. Williamson said that £200 million would be made available to secondary schools to deliver face-to-face summer schools. The government has said that it is up to individual schools to decide whether to run summer schools, for how long, and which children to invite. Research by the Education Endowment Foundation has previously suggested that summer schools have a low impact on pupil progress at a moderate cost. Secondary schools and colleges will be allowed to begin testing students from the 1st of March, according to an email sent to head teachers on Wednesday. The Department for Education said that testing could begin in secondary schools from next week, so long as students maintain social distance and go home after they receive their test result. The DfE added that this was voluntary and at the discretion of each individual school or college. Secondary schools will be allowed to stagger the return of students over the week beginning the 8th of March in order to test every student before they return to the classroom. A head teacher attacked by Piers Morgan has received an avalanche of support from parents at the school he runs. Lee Hill, head teacher at Howden Junior School, had renamed houses named after historical colonial figures such as Francis Drake and Walter Raleigh. One parent, speaking to the Daily Mirror, said that she did not know a single parent who has kicked off about the changes and described him as a breath of fresh air. Another parent commented on Facebook that Mr. Hill is outstanding and that Morgan's criticism of his tattoos was bang out of order. Mr. Hill said he had made the changes after a former pupil wrote a letter addressing concerns about school houses being named in honour of people linked to the enslavement trade. That's your latest education news with Tom Hopkins Burke.
Live from Yorkshire, this is The Late Show with Sammy White on Teachers Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome back. Yay, I played the right news. Miracle upon miracles. Darren is still with us. Darren White, no relation. I feel like I need to say that lots of times, Darren.
Say that more than is necessary.
My personal question to you then, Darren, is, and I know the answer, but do you have a tattoo?
I don't have a tattoo, no. I have several tattoos.
Does that make you a poor quality teacher?
Well, if you listen to Piers Morgan, potentially, but I don't agree with it at all. And I think in this day and age, people have got to see beyond that kind of superficial approach. And I find it quite bizarre. I must admit, I do sit down and I watch things like GMB in the morning, and a lot of what Piers Morgan says makes sense a lot of the time. But then he goes and says something like this, which completely undermines his argument, because he'll be berating somebody one day for having a go at somebody on Twitter or not giving them a fair crack because of this or that. And then he comes out with this attack on poor Lee Hill, who, you know, was actually doing his level best in what's been, let's be honest, a horrendous year. And who'd be a head teacher this year without any of this going on? You know, to come out and basically say that just because he's got a tattoo sleeve, he really shouldn't be doing the job he's doing, and he's not doing the job he's paid to do, or he's not able to, I just think is ludicrous. And, you know, my full support goes out to Lee Hill. You know, as I said, I've got tattoos. I've got 13. My tattooist, I'll be honest, my tattooist is a guy called Dean Kendall. He is very, very professional, and he's very honest. And he's always said to me, look, whatever you want, I'll do it for you, but think about it carefully. And we've made a decision between the two of us that every tattoo I've got can be covered up. So when I had some work done on my arm, he suggested that I put on a short sleeve shirt, and then I draw a line where that sleeve comes to, and then we'll make sure the tattoo sits above that line, because he understands that there is a little bit of prejudice there. But actually, I don't think it makes a difference at all. You know, I've been a senior leader for 10 years. I went on to be a head of school for a while as well. It had no impact whatsoever on my ability to do my job. And in fact, if anything, it's a bit of a teachable moment, I think. There are occasions where students have seen my tattoos because sports day, I've had a pair of shorts on, or, you know, in the right light through a certain shirt, sometimes you can see a faint outline, and the students will ask. And actually, I've had some very, very important and considered conversations with young people about tattooing and the fact that, you know, it's a decision you make that potentially you've got to live with for life, and what made you make that decision, why did you get your first one, are there any you regret, what do they mean, all those kind of things.
It's what they mean. I've got a tattoo, and I may be a poor teacher, but my tattoo certainly doesn't climb into my brain and make me not be a great teacher. It's more my own thinking and doing. I'd be interested to the listeners, have you got tattoos? Have you ever been challenged about your tattoos at work? Are you conscious of your tattoos when you're at work in that teaching environment? Like you say, Darren, about having it covered under your shirt. I've taught in a school once, and policy was that you would cover tattoos. And if they were in an uncoverable area, you would wear a plaster to cover the tattoo. And so my tattoo is on my ankle, and it was the summer and it was really hot. And so I had pale coloured tights on, and I wore a plaster to cover my tattoo on my ankle. And my head teacher said to me, I'm sick of seeing that plaster on your ankle. It's dirty. And I turned around and I said, I'm not being funny, but your policy said I had to wear when I've got a tattoo underneath. And he went, you shouldn't have had a tattoo, then you should be more professional.
Ooh, and maybe they should be more professional as well in the comments they make.
Yeah, and that's a fairly recent story for me when I was in teaching in schools, probably about 8 years ago, 7 years ago, something like that. So, yeah, a fascinating insight of what it's like to be a tattooed teacher in a school. I was definitely looked down on from that point once they realised that I had a tattoo. I think I'd been destined for greatness, and it was quickly dashed from my hands because they realised I was tattooed and therefore could not achieve.
It's horrendous, really, in this day and age. And I remember very vividly, probably about 6 or 7 years ago, we had a visitor come to one of our schools, and he was head to toe covered in tattoos. He was an American guy, and I can't remember exactly what he was. His name was that he went by, but it was, you know, tattooed something or other. And he was a former offender who basically went around schools as a motivational speaker. And his whole face was covered. When he walked in the room, obviously the impact of that, it just grabbed everybody's attention straight away. And he didn't even have to speak. And he had those kids in the palm of his hand because he was different. He was real. You know, it was something amazing to look at. And then he used his tattoos to talk to them about his story and where he'd gone wrong in life and where he'd learned from his mistakes and where he put them right. And ultimately, that's the message we want to get across to children, right?
Like we said, isn't it? It's the meaning of the tattoo. You know, sure, even if it was a drunken tattoo on holiday, it's still got some meaning and you've learned from that. And there's still some, I'm not saying mine is that, by the way, but I'm just saying that you've learned from that and you've grown from that. And I think that's a powerful lesson to pass on to young people as well, that even when you make a mistake, because it's hard as a teacher sometimes to model mistakes as well. And so it can open up wonderful avenues for conversation. I'm just checking the messages. Dave's saying he doesn't have a tattoo and he'd be a rubbish teacher. Dave would be an amazing teacher, actually. You know Dave as well, don't you, Darren? And Dave would make a great teacher. He has missed his vocation in life. He's an epic IT guru manager. I don't know his official title in his academy chain. Ryan wants to know if it's a Celtic tattoo on my ankle. It's not Ryan, but there may be other ones that are. Lou says professional. The standards for that are so excluding and othering. They are professional standards. I live in fear of them sometimes, that someone's going to judge my professionalism. Because I try to be professional all the time, but it can be quite subjective sometimes in what the application of that professional standard is. And I remember when I was newly qualified, I lived in fear that the governors would be on my case for something or other. What's your experience of that word professional, Darren?
I think it's one of those things that it really depends on the leaders you work with and how human they are. I've been very, very fortunate in my career that I've worked with some fantastic head teachers who have had very high standards, but at the same time have been human beings and have been very reasonable about things. You know, one of the best bosses I ever worked for, John Shinall, he had a particular beanies bonnet about, you know, top buttons being done up on a shirt, and students had to have their top buttons done up and so did staff. And if you arrived on an interview at the school with your top button undone, he took that as a message that you didn't really fully respect the school and therefore he didn't want to employ you. So we would often send people away if they refused to do anything about it. We would ask them very politely and say, look, this is the standard we expect at the school. Can you conform to that, please? And some people were absolutely fine with it and some didn't. And, you know, everyone's got their own idea of what professionalism is. My own way of looking at it, you know, if you're going on an interview at school, do your research, find out what's the dress policy at that school, drive past in the morning or in the day before and find out what teachers on the gate are wearing and get an idea from that. Don't just, you know, rock up in a pair of combat trousers and a jumper and expect that to be seen as, you know, making a good impression if that's not what everybody else is wearing. Okay. And that doesn't just work for education. You know, I've said that to students as well when they're looking for part-time jobs. If you're interested in working somewhere, go and scope it out. What does everyone else wear? What do they look like? And when you go and approach them and you say, look, I've got my CV. Have you got any jobs going? Wear something that matches so you look like you fit.
You know, yeah, interesting messages coming in here, Darren, in that Lou saying nothing wrong with making a bit of an effort. And making an effort with your own style and culture. And then Isla's asking, what does it matter what you're wearing so much in a school? Well, I'll start this off then, Darren. So I've taught in schools, and you're in a multi-academy chain, and I've taught in schools where it's been dictated that I must wear a jacket the full time of being in the building. I've also taught in schools where I had to wear a jacket when walking around the building, but I could remove it when teaching. I've also taught in schools, in most of the schools I've taught in, leggings were completely banned and written explicitly that leggings were banned. And then I also taught in a school once where the length of your skirt was determined as well. What's your experience of staff-directed uniforms in where you've worked, Darren?
We've always gone down the route of, you know, you're setting an example to the students, so dress needs to be appropriate. We've never allowed things like flip-flops because actually that's not safe up and down stairs and things like that. So we've always said that shoes need to be appropriate and sensible and enclosed, but that's more from a health and safety risk point of view and things like that. In terms of dress, I do think there is still, and I saw somebody mentioned it in the comments, there is still a bit of a divide, I think, in that it's almost expected that men will wear a suit or at very least a shirt and a tie and probably a jacket. Whereas when you go into the cities and that these days, it's just not happening. You know, people don't wear ties, and just not wearing a tie doesn't make you suddenly unprofessional. actually, maybe it makes you more comfortable, more approachable. I don't know. But I've always felt, up until about a year ago, I've always worn a full suit, always worn a tie, always worn a jacket.
Which makes me laugh.
It does make you laugh, I know, yes. But I've always worn a suit, and because I felt I needed to. I was a school leader. I felt that needed to be done. I've always had a rule in my classroom when students come in. If I've got my jacket off, they can take theirs off. If I've got mine on, they should ask. I just think that's common courtesy. But when we started to have the windows open all the time for increased ventilation, I decided to do away with the jacket and wear a jumper instead over the top of my shirt. And actually, I found that much more comfortable. And I don't end up crushing as many jackets under wheels of chairs as I had done.
Yeah, and you realise you've got, like, I'd always have a protractor in the pocket and I'd hear that crunch and I'd be like, oh, I've just got my protractor in my jacket pocket. I'm just looking in the messages. So Class 1 probe saying he's got a church down the road and they hired a minister, and when they showed up, he had an earring and the religious people almost died. He was the best minister they ever had, and they drove him off after a year. They couldn't see with their eyes. And that's it, isn't it? It's about that perception of people and that professionalism and that image that you build up of someone, and do they conform to that? And then HB History, which I think is Tom, is saying, are most male teachers one of the few professions where ties are still expected? Yeah, even doctors, I don't see that many doctors wearing ties anymore. They were the two professions that I saw wearing ties. Isla, it's like telling the kids they can't take off the blazers and other kinds of nonsense. Isla, this still happens in schools, you know, that there's summer uniform, there's winter uniform, and yeah, it's very strict. Lou's saying, I can't be doing with it on making girls wear trousers so the boys aren't, make the boys be more respectful. Yeah, absolutely, Lou. And there is a lot of that. But I think schools, the policies are still there. And Lou said, I love what Darren said about teachable moments. So much is lost when everyone has to conform. Yeah, absolutely. And Niall's saying, I like wearing a full suit. I think it sets a good impression and looks smart, but understand it's a personal opinion rather than something that should always be enforced. I think that's true, Niall. And I think it's where that line gets drawn, you know. If you want to wear a suit, you wear a suit. If you want to wear a shirt and tie, you wear a shirt and tie. But how dictated is that policy in the school of uniform? Is it like the school where I worked in, where you must wear a jacket the whole time you're in the building? Or is it a bit of discretion? And how do we respectfully acknowledge that professionalism of teachers, that they're not going to rock up in a boob tube and hot pants?
I really wouldn't. It's not a good look for me
or for me, Darren, but it's that, isn't it? And it comes back to this tattoo debate, and it genuinely doesn't matter. I mean, Jackie joked earlier that tattoos do climb into your brain and make you a daft teacher, and yeah, Jackie knows me, so she can probably get away with that, but it genuinely doesn't matter if you've got a tattoo or not. It doesn't determine the quality of your teaching. But I just want to throw out there as well, then does it matter what your teacher's wearing when they're talking to you? Does the person stood in front of you have to wear a tie if they're male? You might insist that they wear a tie if they're female. But in your perception of a teacher, it's that age-old ask a child to draw the picture of the person that they're describing, isn't it? It's, you know, mm-hmm. If you ask a child to draw a picture of God, they draw a man with a white beard. And if we asked a child to draw a picture of a teacher, what would that teacher look like? And yeah, Lou saying, yes, teachers being trusted to dress appropriately, but with their own style. Yeah, I think there's so much we could go into this, but I'm conscious of time. So Darren, I just wanted to ask you, what's your top of the pops this week? What thing have you seen this week that's been the best thing you've seen this week? What's lifted you up this week?
Oh, that's an easy one, actually. I was very, very fortunate to be invited to judge a speech contest at a school in Monterrey in Mexico, which I did yesterday afternoon. So I was a guest judge at the Instituto Brillamont in Monterrey in Mexico, and we judged speeches in English from students, 3-minute speeches from memory, on a variety of different topics in their second language, from grade 7, 8, and 9. So kind of year 8, year 9, year 10 sort of age. And they were absolutely phenomenal. It was a real pleasure to be able to do it. It was great. They were thrilled that, you know, they'd got judges coming from the other side of the world just to listen to them. They did a fantastic job. They spoke so passionately about all of the things they believed in. Topics like, is it okay to give up on someone, and, you know, digital technology in the future, and does it make us more lonely, and feminism and the rights of women, and all sorts of really, really inspiring topics. And then we had to judge them all. There were three of us judging. And the winners, the winner in each age group, got extra credit towards their final exam grades, which I just think, particularly at the moment where there's this conversation about, you know, exams and coursework and everything else, what a great motivational factor to know that if you produce this 3-minute speech and somebody scores you highest, actually that's going to get you extra marks and extra grades and a higher grade at the end of it. And the kids were phenomenal. And one of the students also acted as master of ceremonies. They were so professional. Parents came along. It was all on Google Meet. The principal was there and everything else. It was all very formal, but it was absolutely superb. A definite highlight.
Fabulous. That's fabulous. That's great. So I'm just going to wrap up now, Darren, but if you just want to mention again your Twitter handle for anyone who's not already following you.
Yeah, so my Twitter handle is at Ranga the Trainer, R-A-N-G-A, Ranga for Red and Nearly Ginger Association, because I am a carrot top. And also at My EdTech Buddy and www.myedtechbuddy.co.uk for my PD, self-paced PD.
Fabulous. Thank you very much for joining me tonight, Darren. That's been really interesting. I appreciate your time.
It's been brilliant. Thanks for having me, Sammy. And thanks to everyone for listening.
So, I just wanted to pick up...
Live from Yorkshire, this is The Late Show with Sammy White on Teachers Talk Radio.
I just wanted to pick up in the chat that Class One Probes put, this is one of the best podcasts on Beat. It's about something important. I think, wow, that's great that you've joined us tonight. And Dave saying, do you think Darren, I should have asked this before he went, do you think your students could perform as well as this, Darren? We'll take that to Twitter afterwards. Ryan saying he always wondered what the Ranga stood for. But I think, and that's the power of this online personal learning network that I started the conversation with Joe, is that these opportunities that have come to us in this lockdown world that we're all exploring and amplifying are truly wonderful. And it's something that we really need to hold on to and we need to keep hold of. I think I just want to draw your attention. If you are enjoying this show, I'm very pleased that you're enjoying the show. I just want to draw your attention that we're here every day on Teachers Talk Radio. We've got loads of good shows. So tomorrow you've got The Drive with Kyle, and then you've got The Late Show with Niall as well. That rhymes, I didn't know it did. And Saturday you've got The Breakfast Show with Matt, and then you've got The Late Show with Khalil. And Khalil, just a wicked laugh on that guy. It just brings tears to my eyes every time I listen to him. And then Sunday you've got Graham as well, and Graham is the voice of the voiceover. So if you want to hear those sultry tones even more, Sunday is the time you can catch Graham with a really interesting show. But yeah, we are Teachers Talk Radio, and you can follow us on Twitter at TT Radio. And this is one of the opportunities that came to me, in that this wouldn't have happened had I not been on Twitter, had I not explored the world around me, had we not had lockdowns and all those sorts of things. And it's about how we develop as individuals, and what we were talking about with Joe about that importance of being out there and sharing that knowledge and meeting each other in different spaces is really, really important. And if you do want to be a guest on this show or any of the shows, please do message one of the hosts, myself or one of the other hosts, if you want to come on. And if you've got anything valuable that you want to say, you're more than welcome to pop it in the chat, and you can call in. And I think that's a feature that hopefully as we go through this, obviously we're early days with this, but hopefully as we go through, people will call in and contribute and ask us questions as we go through. But I just wanted to leave you with my thoughts this week on something that I've been reading. I was reading about teaching lessons, And I was reading an argument between two educators, and I'd love your thoughts on this, please, listeners, if you want to message in. Is it okay to teach a lesson that you find on the internet? Is it okay to teach a lesson that you find on the internet? So you've got a class coming up, you're going to find a lesson on the internet, and that's the lesson you're going to use. Is that okay for you as a teacher? Lou, why would you want to? Well, time's tight. People might be pushed for time. They might want a lesson that's easy to go. Darren, yes, if it's relevant, but modify to suit your class. I didn't say modifying it. I was saying, is it okay to use that lesson? Isla, why not? With or without adaptations, this is it. This was the whole point of the argument. And it was about sharing a resource. And someone was saying, well, what's the difference between you getting it from someone in the staff room? And someone else was saying, well, what's the difference between writing yourself and making adaptations and things like that? Darren's saying, define use. Yeah, it might give you a good starter, but you teach it relationally. And I think that's it, isn't it? It's that personal adaptability. And use is you know, literally picking it off the shelf and running with it in your class. I think everyone's coming in the messages here saying that they would adapt it. And I'd like to think that that's what would happen, but I'm not sure that I actually have a problem with someone teaching a lesson off the internet. Isla says she rarely finds something she can just pick up and run with. And I wonder, Isla, is that because of the subject that you teach, or is it because you want to adapt things? Lou, I always Google to get started to know what I'm doing. Yeah, and I think you start your starting point and then you move from there. But I'm genuinely not sure where I sit on this, in that if someone said to me, here's a lesson, go teach it, I don't know. For me, I need to know the quality of the lesson beforehand. Not that I would adapt it, but the quality. Isla saying, but if it works, why not? Exactly. I'm on the fence, Isla, too. Depends on the lesson topic, Mars is saying. She's messaged in. Darren's message, you'll always put your own stamp on it. I think it's hard to teach with other people's resources. Dave's saying, what's the difference between this and teaching from the textbook? Well, there we go. Lou's on the fence now. And then someone else is saying that plagiarism aside, that's what it's there for. Absolutely. And for me, I think I have to know the quality of the lesson. So I'm looking for a review, or I'm looking for a rating, or I'm looking for someone that's used it before I would go and run with it. Darren's coming on the fence too. Everybody come on the fence. Try. You don't all have to agree with me, but we can disagree. But I think there's a thing here about, is it okay just to pick it up and grab and go? And I'm seeing a lot of people seeking ways to create grab and go resources. And a part of me is thinking, I'm not quite sure that's the best use of everybody's time, because I'm not sure that that's what people want. But like I say, I'm on the fence. Someone's saying that I share planning others in my year group. Similar, surely. Absolutely. Co-planning is absolutely the best. Darren's got a splinter from coming onto the fence. Mars is saying you can adapt to the delivery. And Isla's saying we do need to find ways to reduce workload, though. Absolutely. Workload and teacher burnout is such a real thing. I hit the wall myself fairly recently, completely hit the wall. So it's true. And then Darren's saying, what we actually need is to give teachers the time to plan and mark like in other countries. Well, that just sounds utopian, doesn't it, Darren? Giving time for planning and marking. I think I was talking to a colleague in a college the other day, who's teaching 28 hours a week on a 37-hour contract. So fairly high in the teaching hours, 28 hours teaching, but that was two 13-hour days that they'd scheduled in for this colleague. So they had two 13-hour days and then two shorter days. I'm quite sure that the burnout would be real quite soon on that one if I had to do two 13-hour days. Personally, I do one 13-hour day a week. Those of you who don't work in further education or colleges, it is a real thing. You start teaching at 8:30 in the morning, then you'll still have a class 9:30, 10 o'clock at night. You might have a gap in the middle. You probably won't be teaching all day, but you are expected to be teaching or in the building for those hours. So it's quite a thing in further education. Dave's saying teaching is less about content and more about relationships. So if the content is good and you can bring the content to learners with whom you've built the relationships, then why not? We can't reinvent the wheel every day. And I think that's what I'm thinking, Dave. I'm thinking that's true. It's just this adaption level, and it's that teacher discretion again, and it's that directive personalization that we're trusting teachers to do. Darren's saying, I guess colleagues with no freeze in a week. Goodness me. How on earth they survive the burnout we'll be hitting. And Dave's not sitting on the fence. Presenteeism needs to be addressed in education. Why can't you go home to work? Oh, 100%, Darren, 100%. One of the reasons I left schools to go into colleges was because I had a free on an afternoon. And I think I finished teaching at 12:35. And that was it for the day. And I had to stay in the building all day. And I remember booking a dentist appointment in that time because that was the only time I could get it. And I had a real emergency dental treatment. And my head refused to sign me out of the building because that dentist appointment should be put out of work time. I mean, I was really in pain. I'd had major surgery on my teeth and I needed to go. Eventually, he let me go. But yeah, absolutely, Darren, it's a real thing. Isla, I was going to bed, but I'm absolutely hooked on tonight's content. Thanks, Isla. That's great. Yeah, it's been great to have you all along with me tonight and listening to my random warblings. I had loads of stuff that I wanted to talk to you about, but I haven't, so I'll save it for another show. Lucy, she's engrossed too, and she won't be able to sleep. We can all stay up together. We'll have an after show party all together. We can join on Twitter on an after show party if we want. It is the UKFE chat now anyway on Twitter. So if you are an FE educator, do check out the UKFE chat hashtag. That happens on a Thursday evening. It's a really wonderful space to connect and collaborate. And if you're not a further education educator, you might want to check out the hashtag too, because you might want to see what's happening in further education at the moment and where things are going and things like that. Hopefully we've bridged the divide for you this evening when we've got Darren, who's worked in an academy chain, and Joe, who's worked all the way from early years all the way through to further education and now higher education in teacher training. It's been absolutely wonderful seeing so much chat coming in. Darren saying the best heads allow you to go for personal reasons because they'll know you repay them with loyalty. 100%, Darren. I've worked for some really great heads over my time. And he also says it was a great show with some stellar guests. So I think that includes himself. And Lou saying it's all teaching. Yeah, we are all educators. Isla's saying trust is key. Maz agrees with that. And I missed out community education. My apologies, Lou. I did miss out community education as well. Further education, community education. We're all teachers. We're all educators. If we're changing outcomes for young people's or adults' lives with the content we're delivering, then we are teachers and we are educators. And we're all in this together. And we should all support each other as well and try and explore other sectors and try and understand the shifts and the trends in education so that we can participate and engage more actively in the discussions that we're having. Isla saying we need to share and work together more, 100% across the sectors. That's absolutely right, Isla. I agree with you. So does Lou. Darren says trust comes with the top of the and the DfE's dictionary missing that page. I tweeted this morning when the education secretary arrived in parliament to make a shock announcement of his plans for exams. And I also pointed out that he'd already done a press release and done two blogs. He seemed to be quite keen to get that message out there before he actually went and gave that message, even though last night he said he couldn't give that message. So we'll leave that one hanging there because one rule for them and one for the rest of us. It does appear at the moment, but if you disagree with me, do please message in if you think that the I'm being harsh on the government there. Please do message in and put me right. I think it's a challenging time for educators at the moment. I think everybody is invested in getting the best out of the situation and helping each other. And a lot of teacher bashing's happened this week. But what's been really powerful is to see so many teachers come together to rally against that teacher bashing and to be quite clear and precise in the argument and the celebration of teaching as a profession. And I'm immensely proud to be a teacher, and I'm immensely proud to be a teacher in this pandemic, and I'm immensely proud to have connected with so many wonderful educators in this pandemic via Twitter and via other means, to see and to celebrate and to amplify that work, because nothing restores your faith in teaching more than seeing other people having a wonderful time and a wonderful experience in education. And if we can all just share that and celebrate that a little bit more, the world would be a much, much happier place. So thank you again for listening. My name's Sammy White. You can follow me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is @whatthetrigmath. I know, it's funny. There are lots of great shows coming up on Teacher Talk Radio, so do please follow us on Podbean. Do please drop into other shows and please join in the conversation and share your thoughts and feelings as we go through the subjects that we're talking about. But I will end with my favourite quote, and I read it last week and I'm going to read it again this week. So this quote is from Captain Sully, the amazing hero pilot who brought that plane down in the Hudson River, saving all those lives. And he says, never stop investing and never stop learning. And I think that's the part of being a teacher. Never stop investing, never stop learning for you, for yourself, and looking after yourself so that you can be the best you can be for your students. I've been Sammy White, and this is Teachers Talk Radio.
Live from Yorkshire, this is The Late Show with Sammy White on Teachers Talk Radio.